it makes it easier to get yourself into trouble. You know, you download somebody's GPX track and put it on your phone and start following it, and bad things can happen. And especially bad things can happen if your phone dies, the battery dies or whatnot.
Welcome back to the Fastest Known Podcast. Every Friday, 30 minutes of interesting information you can't get anywhere else. And we have a special podcast today. We're going to talk about the gear of the decade and the coming decade. And to talk about this, we have the all-star lineup here. We have the entire FKT crew. I'll introduce them individually, starting with Peter Backman. Thanks for being here, Peter.
Hello again. Nice to be with you.
And, of course, our esteemed sound engineer, who's normally up there in that soundproof control booth, fiddling with the dials. But here, right down here on the ground floor, we have Craig Randall.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be on this side of the microphone.
And a voice you have never heard before, the person who actually does all the work and is responsible for the entire website and everything that we do, our tech person, Jeff Schuler, who also is 2 minutes away from his marathon PR of 2:30.
All of that was untrue. I'm 3 minutes away. I was on one of the early podcasts for a moment. But hi, Buzz. It's great to be here.
Oh, 3 minutes. Well, your credibility is. You got a lot of work to do here,
Jeff. A lot of work to do.
Okay, this is going to be interesting. We're going to just review the decade in terms of what gear helped FKTers. This isn't a climbing gear. This isn't backpacking. This is for FKTs. And who wants to volunteer something? What really helped you out?
Well, why don't you start, Buzz?
Okay, well, here's what I... Thank you, Peter. Here's a couple of things that I thought really moved the needle. The Garmin Mini, the PLB, the personal locator beacon, started off as being sort of this strange thing. Arctic adventurers used it. And then it evolved, there was different iterations. And then once, I owned the Spot and I owned the big DeLorme, but Garmin kind of consolidated it. And when they got the Mini, it weighs 3.5 ounces. It syncs with your smartphone. So instead of these microscopic little buttons, you could send and receive actual text messages through satellite network by typing things into your smartphone. So I think the Garmin Mini was just amazing.
Yeah, all those PLB things, but particularly the ability to do two-way satellite texting is huge. And then just to add on to that, I'd say there's a whole bunch of tracking options that are based on cell technology that'll work in a lot of places like Europe or the Northeast where you have cell coverage everywhere. So that kind of technology, yeah, I agree, it's a game changer.
Well, what technology works best just for cell phones, if you have coverage?
Well, I haven't reviewed them all, so from time to time people submit FKTs using these technologies. Like we had actually Carol Sabe, when he did the Appalachian Trail, used Legends Tracking, I believe it was, which was based on cell technology. And that would even buffer his tracking points until it came into cell range and then download them. And a lot of people are using these in Europe in particular, where you have cell coverage almost everywhere.
Interesting. Never heard of that. But check out the Garmin Mini. It's not that expensive, and they really are mini. And a quick non-disclaimer, we're not affiliate. We have no affiliate links. So when we suggest a piece of gear, we get nothing. Zippo out of it. Well, I'm going to just keep going the same track, if you don't mind. I'm going to mention Caltopo and Gaia, the 1-2 punch here, which is just crazy. This fellow invented Caltopo, in his bedroom or something, and it's extraordinarily useful bit of mapping software. That's Caltopo, in case you haven't seen it. Go check it out. And you can create any route that you want with his maps, with his software, and then download it into your phone and then track your own created route just with perfect accuracy. And you could annotate it, you can put water sources on it, you can put anything else you want on it. And then the 1-2 punch, of course, is Gaia, G-A-I-A, and that goes on your smartphone. And with that, you just download maps in advance, and then it's just using the satellite. You don't have to have cell phone coverage, and you could track your course to within 5 meters or so anywhere in the world. So that's a big one for me.
And actually, CalTopo, I think last month, introduced new high-resolution digital elevation models, so you can see better hill shading down to, like, the meter or something like this. So that's through LiDAR. So LiDAR might be gear of the decade, like, what is it, light or laser imaging detection and ranging, something like that. It's like radar, but with lasers. So satellites and drones can pulse lasers down to the Earth and get, you know, the light bounces back and they get super high accurate measurements of how high the ground is.
So it's different than GPS.
Totally. Oh yeah.
Wow.
So you're getting elevation model. So you know when you're using CalTopo, you can see topographical renderings. So if you're like backcountry skiing, you want to know how steep is this pitch, and so now you can get higher res data for that.
Okay, and that's to come, or that's
available? That's on CalTopo now.
Oh, CalTopo added the LiDAR technology, so their maps are better.
They added LiDAR data, or data source from LiDAR, so their maps are better.
It's a layer. Okay, good one, Jeff.
So I would just put in a plug for CalTopo, because every time it comes up, I just want people to get on there, because it's all free, but you can get a premium version, and it's really worth it. And like you said, the guy who does, whoever it was that designed that thing, has done a brilliant job, and it's really worth, you know, ponying up the $25 or whatever for the premium version.
Good call. I forgot his name as well, but he just did it. It was amazingly useful, and just pony up, kick in the $25 for premium. Okay, that's good. That's good. So we start off a little techie with our gear of the decade. Are we going to stay techie, or do you have some actual physical objects you've been liking?
Well, I think to stay on the tech notion, it goes without saying that Strava, I think, may combine the best features of everything we've mentioned so far, CalTopo, et cetera, all in one, because you can create routes, you can socialize it, you can compete against other people, and you can share it really easily. And in terms of the community of people doing FKTs now, it seems like, as far as I can tell, a lot of the first time they share what they're doing happens on Strava. So I don't know if CalTopo has the same built-in community online in terms of people sharing.
Well, Strava is the social network for athletes.
Yeah.
So it's a different deal. CalTopo has dramatically more features, but Strava, like you said, connects everybody. It's billions of users.
And just being able to chase people, see what we're capturing the fastest known times, but you also have, you know, just the leaderboards for any given segment, big or small, there. Then you can chase, try to get on the top 10 or chase for the CR. So I think that's inspired a lot of competition and exploration.
Right. Liking Strava is sort of like liking the Beatles, but it's legitimate. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's there. It's everywhere. I use it. Someone once asked me, what's the difference between fastest known time and Strava? I said, well, it's night and day. It's totally different. FKTs, of course, are each one is curated. Each one has been somewhat verified and has been examined to be viable. Even though we put 1,000 up this year, Peter curated each one. So it's kind of this worldwide bucket list of the best routes, while Strava is just everything anyone has ever done. So you can't really tease out data the same way you can with fastest known time. Okay, what else are you seeing?
I think on the website front, if we stick around there, the Mountain Project, Hiking Project, Trail Run Project, I think the umbrella is like Adventure Project, right? I think those have done a good job of helping people find routes, like specifically Trail Run Project here. When I'm traveling, if I'm going somewhere, I'll look at Strava heat maps and I'll look at Trail Run Project to find what I want to do there.
You look at the Strava heat maps?
Yeah.
Wow. You're the tech guy, Jeff.
You should probably explain what that is for non-tech people.
Well, Strava keeps track of all these runs, right? And so if you want to see where people are running the most, I think it's in their labs section, or you might have to have premium, I'm not sure.
Premium.
But you can see a heat map is kind of showing with color where I'm gesturing with my hands here. That's not working. Where people have run the most. So you can see the popular areas to run, the most traveled.
Right. In fact, Strava gets a fair amount of their income from that. Strava sells premium memberships, which quick download here on the side isn't doing that well. Not that many people as they wanted have signed up for premium. So they actually make a fair amount of their money on the heat source, heat mapping. So they sell to OpenStreet. And so they actually sell industrial and commercial applications of their massive data set. But you also called out Hiking Project, et cetera. Quick note, that's owned by REI, which is why it got developed so well. Mountain Project was started here in Boulder by a fellow named Mike, and then he sold out to REI, and they added on Trail Run Project, Hiking Project, and Mountain Biking Project. And I've used those as well. Mm-hmm. You can be somewhere, and I was in Moab last May. I was lost, wasn't sure where I was. Oh, wait. Whipped out the phone. There's my little blinking blue dot. Exactly. And they're a few hundred meters away. Oh, there's the trail. It's over there. So good call, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would, one thing that's not of this decade, but maybe two decades, is LED flashlights. So, I was just thinking back to when we had incandescent flashlights. And I remember some company came out with a 2 C-cell flashlight that would last for 5 hours, and that was amazing. And I mean, people don't even know what C-cells are anymore, but they were gigantic batteries, and you had to carry a bunch of them if you wanted to run overnight. And of course, with an incandescent light, there was always the possibility of the bulb burning out, so you had to carry an extra bulb. So when LEDs came out, which is really about 20 years ago, LED flashlights, but they've really gotten so much better in the last decade. That was just a gigantic game changer.
Well, I could basically identify the year, because in 1999, when you and I did the FKT on the Colorado Trail, we were indeed using these giant incandescent flashlights, and you had to carry a pound of batteries just to get through the night. It was bizarre, and we were really into these batteries. And then the next year, when we did the FKT and the John Muir Trail, 2000, so that was the tipping point, 1999 to 2000, we had these dorky LEDs, and they were like, it was a full-size flashlight, and I think it had the same luminosity as a keychain light.
But it was, they were green, because the brightest LEDs were at that time were green, so maybe if we're talking about the last decade, it would be the advent of bright white LEDs. But the green ones were cool, and it was called the Lightwave 2000.
Wow. Peter. Well done.
Let's get them as a sponsor.
I still have mine. I don't know if the company exists, but I still have the green one.
Still work.
Yeah.
No, we got
the LEDs will last forever.
We got the green ones because they're better for your eyes. You don't. It's like in a dark room.
And the green LEDs were brighter.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, that's good. We're back two decades. Well, I'm gonna on the same tactic. Look, we haven't even gotten to the hard goods yet. Maybe we won't. Maybe that's not a real issue. But I have to call out the smartphone. I mean, it's so omnipresent, it's almost you can't notice it. But as Peter noted, we go back pre-smartphone days here, and it was a totally different deal. And now the smartphone has anything you want to do. It's your camera, it's your beacon, it's your navigation, it's whatever you want. So the smartphone really changed the game. Nobody goes out without a smartphone anymore. But they actually shouldn't. Okay.
Yeah, well, so I could comment on that too, because there's a downside to that, which of course is that trouble. You know, you download somebody's GPX track and put it on your phone and start following it, and bad things can happen. And especially bad things can happen if your phone dies, the battery dies or whatnot. So, you know, some of these technology things are great and super useful, but they also invite trouble in certain instances.
They can.
Well, and, sorry to interrupt, but it seems like it's a rare occasion when someone purely relies on simply a smartphone, because like we've really advocated for, you want to have multiple sources of verification. And so a lot of times you've got a watch on top of your phone, on top of maybe someone else, tracker, and and a Garmin or whatever. So I could see the limitations. At the same time, maybe it's better suited for shorter FKTs or more social FKTs.
That's interesting. And Peter made an interesting note, because we have seen people following GPX tracks in their phone and make errors. Yeah. You get in the canyons, the signal starts bouncing. And I remember a particular instance, which we're not going to describe here, but the navigation wasn't that bad, and they blew the navigation because they're looking at their phone instead of at the land.
I think also in a previous episode with Kyle and Kyle Richardson and Bill Wright, someone was saying, just because you have the GPX doesn't mean you can do the route. So, yeah. So it's another sort of double-edged sword.
Yeah, it's kind of. I think this one sort of straddles the best and worst of the decade, because it has a lot of drawbacks at the same time as benefits and ubiquity, like you said.
That's funny. Just because you can see the GPX track doesn't mean you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are going out there because they've, I know the way, but yeah, that's not all there is to it.
Okay, good call. Well, here's a bit of hard goods, and I was involved with this. When I started, actually for most of my running career, we wore packs, but then starting about 8 years ago, we wore vests. And the advent of the lightweight, close-fitting running vest was huge. Enabled us to carry more gear much more comfortably and access water and other gear up front, where you didn't have to take it on and off all the time. And now you don't really think about it. Is running vests are ubiquitous. So if you just got into the sport within the last 5 years, you may not notice this is something that came up only within this last decade. Peter, I think you're a mountain guy. You kind of, you got something here in the hard goods realm.
Well, I would say things like micro spikes and lightweight crampons have been huge for me personally. Catula is a company that probably also goes back 20 years, but and they made early on very lightweight crampons that you could strap on your running shoes. And Buzz, you and I used them to go up Mount Rainier and things like that, aluminum crampons that weighed 9 ounces per foot, I think. And then more recently, the advent of micro spikes, which really sort of expand the range of what somebody can do with very lightweight gear. I use them all the time.
Well, we do live in the northern climes here. But you're right. When we go up in the foothills above Boulder, yeah, it's like a micro spike commercial. I mean, that's what it looks like. They're filming a commercial. You could see 50 people and 45 of them are wearing Catula micro spikes.
Game changer.
As they should.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you're not wearing it, it's not going to look good.
Yeah, I think you see more leftover or dropped micro spikes around the trails of Boulder. You could probably create a set every day if you go out running. I always find lost ones.
Oh, really?
So they're everywhere. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
if people you find drop a small one, my yeah, wife lost one.
Oh, okay. See, it's a point.
Right. So Southern California listeners, well, no, if you just went up Mount Baldy in the last week, you might have worn Catula micro spikes. So this applies to many people.
Or if you were at the Grand Canyon right now. If you wanted to go down to the canyon, you'd probably need the spikes to get down the first couple thousand vertical feet.
You're right. Okay, we're going to wrap it up here on the gear of the decade. Anything else, people?
Well, I think I'm peering at your computer, Buzz, but I have it on my list too. The Katadyn Be Free bottle with the built-in filter has just been, I think, a lot on a lot of people's, you know, best of the decade or best new gear, period. Not just for FKTs, but for all athletes in the last few years.
That's a good call. So that's the Katadyn Be Free. It's B-E free. And so you can Google that and look it up. It's just a bottle that's the screw-on filter. And there's adapters, and the screw-on filter can screw onto different size bottles. But it's sold as one. REI is the easiest place to buy the Be Free, actually. Mm-hmm. And so rather when, again, we were starting off, we had all sorts of complex ways to purify the water. And Katadyn made this pump. The pump weighed about a pound, mm-hmm, and took a long time. So the Be Free, you just squeeze it through the bottle. Okay. Well, here's an associated thing, which is, before we move on, I can't help but mention this, but at least where we're from, everyone's doing ski-mo. It's kind of the thing now. It's a nice cross sport, and gravel riding. So I can't help but just call out one of the fun things that a lot of mountain desert trail people are doing now is they're ski mountaineering in the winter and gravel riding, which is just blown up all over the world. So that's kind of a fun thing.
Yeah, and tech is behind both those, right? The binding and boot technology that for Skimo and just frame changes in gravel bikes have allowed these things to be possible, make them lighter and more adaptable.
Right, and in neither sport are you going to get hit by a car.
Hopefully.
Okay, so here's an interesting question, guys. What's not Gear of the Year? I mean, what had hype? What had promise? What were people talking about? And what was just, not a thing?
Well, this is controversial, but PEDs. Right. Not best of the decade. And I think you, Peter and Buzz, would have more input on historically what this has been like for FKTs. But, you know, it's all over the Olympics all the time. It's all over endurance sports all the time. Forever. So is it an FKTs? I think all of us would probably discourage it, obviously, but if it's there, I think that's something that we could say is not Gear of the Decade.
Don't use it.
Performance enhancing drugs will not win Gear of the Decade award. They will win the Don't Do This award. Mm-hmm. That's a good call, Craig.
Yeah, and nutrition, I mean, I think we probably could have put some nutrition items on Gear of the Decade, because I think that's also become something a lot smaller, easier to take on a lot of calories without carrying a lot of weight. Sure. So on the other end of that, on the nutrition side, we don't really know maybe what's out there and what people are using or not. And so it's an interesting topic, I think.
Well, for me, what's not happening thing is special diets. Again, yeah. This is controversial because a lot of people, we want a special diet. We want the magic bullet. But personally, I'm not seeing that as being a panacea. I think people get into all sorts of different things, which work for them, which is great. There's no criticism. But in terms of changing or moving or improving the sport, I don't think any special diet has emerged.
You weren't in full ketosis when you did the John Muir Trail, just running off of your body fat, Buzz?
I was not, actually. I was
not a sustainable...
No, I took, when we did the John Muir Trail and the Colorado Trail, I took Rick Trujillo's advice. You know, because Rick Trujillo had done the Colorado 14ers record with Ricky Denisek twice, actually. And Rick just said, eat, and keep eating. And that's basically it.
I think people, I don't know, I might disagree with that. I'm not a keto proponent, but I think a lot of people have gained a lot of benefits from it. And maybe fat was part of the Gear of the Decade. Like, people started to realize again that fat, like, it's not all carbs. That's not what's going to help fuel you in the long haul. And, you know, carbs are heavier to carry. You got to carry more, carbs are heavier. If you're carrying stuff, you can carry a little bit of fat and it's going to go a lot longer way. So I don't know. I'm not in ketosis right now, but I think it's been important for some people.
Well, you got to take 3 minutes off your marathon PR.
All right. I'm working on fat adaptation.
Oh, actually. You are?
Yeah. Trying to get my body, because you want to prolong the bonk, right? Mm-hmm. And so you want to be, if you're operating at a low enough level, you want to be burning fat as much as you can, so you're not depleting your muscles of glycogen. So,
right, that's an interesting one. I think that's a good clarification, Jeff. Fat, you know, back in the day, margarine was considered a health food, right, which of course is one of the worst things you can eat because it's all hydrogenated. Butter is way back in vogue, and of course, high quality fats and oils, nuts, etc., are very much in vogue. So that's a good health breakthrough. Anything else was a not happening?
Well, specifically in terms of FKTs and reporting FKTs and things like that, I could make another controversial statement, which I think that Facebook is the not Gear of the Decade, because it's, I'm not a Facebook user, and so often people will submit their thing with a trip report on Facebook, and unless the permissions are set in a certain way, I can't even see it. So anything that is proprietary like that, if you're reporting an FKT, you need to make it public for people. And the organization of Facebook and the way it's done is just a gigantic hassle for many people.
Wow, that's interesting. Of course, Facebook has many other issues, very controversial, but I can't help but mention that it was supposed to be this technology that connected everyone, instead it's doing the opposite. It's sort of separating everyone, and everyone gets the news that they want to read and they click on, and so it's had a tendency to separate people rather than bring them together.
Well, now maybe we're not going to get that multi-million dollar sponsorship from Facebook.
Dang. Okay, well, we blew it.
Yeah, I think the other counter to that is that Facebook, particularly for maybe a generation above me, so people that are maybe the later adopters are still using it in a pretty pretty decent way, and that there's some added benefits of things you can make, like communities and that kind of thing, where you can basically isolate yourself from the complete algorithmic based news recommendation, you know, echo chamber. So in some ways, a lot of people, and it's global, so we're a global site, we get people coming from everywhere, and Facebook, like it or not, is global, and people use it all over, so it can be used, I think, still in a productive way.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair. Here's a bit of gear that I think is a big knot. Of course, this is classic. I don't think this is that controversial. Minimalist shoes, right? We almost forgot about minimalist shoes. I mean, that was quite the thing for a number of years. At one point, the Vibram 5 Finger was the number 3 shoe at specialty. And of course, that was the number 1 shoe for podiatrists. I had a friend who ran the Salt Lake City Marathon wearing Vibram 5 Fingers. Of course, he had trouble walking for the next week. But at the same time, minimalism taught people how to run. So it had this, like you said with Facebook, Craig, it had this interesting aspect that everything the shoe companies, and I'm just going to say this, I don't even think this is controversial, everything all the major shoe companies said about their shoes was complete BS. None of it, not a single word, was scientifically verified. And most of it was scientifically disputed and unverified, from, you know, pronation control and neutral, and all of the stories was wrong. And so when minimalism came out, people learned to feel their feet, develop good strides. So that was a big help. But now not too many people are using skinny little shoes.
I guess it helped dispel the idea of, you know, the heel strike as the normal. You see old jogging videos from, I don't want to date myself or date other people.
Or me, but especially.
But yeah, you saw the runner heel striking and kind of doing this jogging motion, and people realized that the forefoot has a lot more importance. But we went a little too far with that, right? And a lot of people's arches dropped and their calves got shredded. And I'm glad to see barefoot running kind of go out the door.
Right, right. And one notices this doesn't pertain to FKTs at all, but the Nike Vaporfly is real. It's the real deal. It's in terms of running, if we're having a running podcast here, that's certainly the gear of the year, if not the decade, because it's been scientifically validated to improve marathon times on road surfaces by 4%.
Are we going to see a 4% for trail shoes?
Ooh, well, that's a throwdown there, Jeff. So La Sportiva, Scarpa, Hoka, they all got to be listening to your throwdown.
I'm sure they're all listening.
I would set the table for Peter on this one, because you shared it with us internally, but trail shoes that have more of an approach style rubber open up a lot of possibilities, and you in particular, I think, take advantage of that.
Yeah, so now we're back to gear of the decade rather than not gear of the decade, but right. Sticky rubber shoes, approach shoes that are more like a running shoe. La Sportiva has done a lot in this area, but other brands, I'm sure, as well. Yeah, they open up a lot. Yeah, I use them all the time.
Right, and what Peter's referring to is that rather than a polyurethane, any type of synthetic foam, well, I should say it's still a synthetic, but it's a synthetic rubber that's specially formulated to be grippy. Mm-hmm. And that's not marketing hype. It actually is much grippier. All climbing shoes have used it for a few decades. And they started putting it on the lugged out soles of a so-called approach shoe, which is a term which isn't used that much anymore. You could go on rocks and have much, much better traction, particularly when the terrain got vertical.
But approach shoes typically were, in the old days, were designed by climbing shoe companies, and so they were tended to be very narrow, like climbing shoes, and not all that comfortable for long periods of, for wearing for long periods of time. And now there's been some kind of marriage more between a running shoe style shoe and that sticky rubber approach shoe.
Correct. Here's a really good question. What's next? Or what would you want to see that we're not seeing? So gear the decade for this next decade. What is it? What would you like it to be? Or what is missing?
Well, before we go super, well, maybe this is super high tech, but I want to see microspikes taken to the next level, Wolverine style, where they just come out of your shoes when you need them. You start slipping and some spikes or blades or whatever, not retract, but the opposite of retract.
I see. So there's automatically, so there's a sensor.
There's a sensor.
So as soon as there's
you start losing friction and your spikes come out.
Deploy.
Yes.
Wow. Jeff, just...
Yeah.
Maybe we should just kind of take this podcast private and we should work on this.
Work on these ideas. We can. Well, nobody's up in the sound booth right now because Craig's down here, so we can't edit that out.
No, we can't take it out. This is right. Wow. Sure. Deployable sensing microspikes.
Well, I would say another technology that's already here, really, but will become more popular and cheap is heads-up display technology. So having all of the tracking information that we've already talked about from different websites, route information, pace information, all of these different stats that we're monitoring through Strava or Caltopo or whatever in your glasses or in your sunglasses, whatever it is, or maybe another like visor type of...
Projected onto your retina.
Yeah. So that seems like the most streamlined, and it's still people give it a lot of heat currently because the brands who have tried to introduce it have made it really clunky and kind of weird looking, and it's kind of like people who wore Bluetooth headsets for phone calls 10 years ago. But I think it's got a lot of opportunity, and it streamlines all these technologies we've already been talking about.
Well, Google came out with the first glasses I ever tried. The Google Glass, I tried that 6 or 7 years ago. And it was, if you're a tech head, it was interesting. If you weren't,
it's a tough look.
It's a tough look.
To borrow a buzzphrase. That's a tough look.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Jeff, you're our tech expert. Do you see
I would agree. I agree with Craig there. I think augmented reality is like what the smartphone was, you know, for the previous decade and a half. Just being able, you know, we're progressively just ditching more gear and going lighter, just like people have been doing in FKTs. So being able to see all that information without having to, I mean, smartwatches will be good for a few years here, but they're not going to be the transformation that heads-up displays would be. And I think, like, yeah, for route finding, being able to see turn-by-turn directions in the woods or for competition, being able to see your competitor. If you're chasing an FKT, see where they are on the course when you're looking up, you know, when maybe they did the route last year. So neat ideas like that. And like Craig was saying, sort of biometrics, getting all that information right up in front of you, I think will be pretty transformational. The double-edged sword I was thinking about for better route finding is that more people are getting out into the backcountry, and so what are we doing to the backcountry? So, you know, that's a challenge we'll face.
That's a good tempering comment, Jeff, in that we've talked about things that help us, help performance, help our enjoyment, but Jeff made a different comment, which is very apropos. We also have to be protecting nature while we're doing all these things. So that's a good one. Okay. Mm-hmm. Augmented reality, don't trip on that route while you're looking at that little blinking dot.
do you have one?
I was just thinking, you know, in 20 years, when people make movies about the 2010s, everyone in the movie will be walking around staring at their smartphone, and that will be considered really freaky and odd and old-fashioned, because nobody will be doing that. They'll be seeing whatever they see in their glasses or on their retina.
Wow. Okay. A prediction has been made. That's interesting. Well, that's true, because people are just... I mean, I've seen people, young people, they're going out on dates and both are looking at their phones. That's a little odd. That could become in a movie 20 years from now. Or
Totally will.
5 years.
That's how you'll know it's about this period of time. This era. Yeah.
Okay. Well, shall we? Here's one last thing as we wrap up. FastestKnownTime.com. That's been us. We've done a really good job here, I think. We've enjoyed it. And the four of us have had a big impact. I think we've improved people's lives, if I may say so myself.
Yeah, I think we're excited about inspiring people to get out and try these routes and push themselves and push each other and open up a lot of the territory of the world to this kind of speed discovery.
Yeah, I just reiterate that it's super inspiring, I think, to all of us too, to see where these are coming from and the new places, different continents, Africa, India. So we're all super inspired, and it keeps us excited.
Right, we're seeing these FKTs come in. No one else gets to see these, but we see everyone, and it's like, wow, really?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, go onto the website, because I'm going to type up every suggestion here. It'll be in an article coming out also on Friday when this podcast is released. So you can, unfortunately, there might be a few hot links, but there's no affiliate program happening here. So we're not getting anything out of this. It's just a fun conversation to help increase our enjoyment and appreciation of the sport.
And we'd love to hear what you have to say about what is gear of the decade or gear of the coming decade or gear flops of the last decade.
Yeah. Just don't put it on Facebook.
Yeah, don't put it on Facebook.
Excellent call, Peter. So type in comments on the article what you think was good and not so good. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Buzz.